and to operate with no fear or favor of those in power, whether they're Democrats or Republicans. Our pledge is to, as I know yours is, Amy, and has been for a long time as a journalist, is to be accountable to the readers, the viewers, and the listeners. And I just want to say on a personal level, I said this in my introductory essay for Dropsite News. I'm looking forward to returning to why I got into journalism, and Democracy Now! Gave me that opportunity. I'll never forget when you let me beg my way into cutting reel-to-reel tape on the old-fashioned analog reels, and you taught me about the temerity to ask tough questions and to never back down.
And finally, Jeremy, why the name Dropsite?
Well, a drop site is a term of espionage, where it's a place where spies can leave a secret for one another. It's an agreed upon location. It also is a place where you can drop supplies behind enemy lines, to resupply your forces.
5 seconds.
It's also a place where you can drop documents. So we're looking forward to working also with whistleblowers.
Jeremy Scahill, co-founder of the new investigative journalism organization, Drop Site News. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
You are tuned in to KBOL Portland, 90.7 on your FM dial.
K282BH, Philomer, on 104.3 FM.
And K220HR, Hood River, on 91.9 FM.
And streaming on the web at kboo.fm.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Volunteer-powered community radio.
KBOO.
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 KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. This month's Engineering Committee meeting will be held on July 11th at 7 p.m. The meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Hi, this is Cecil Prescott. Celeste Carey and I are the co-hosts for More Talk Radio, which airs on KBOO FM 90.7 on Mondays at 8 a.m. For 30 years, Celeste and I have been encouraging and engaging interviews and conversations about politics, social issues, and things which concerns you, your family, and your community. Join us on Mondays at 8 a.m. and be a part of this community radio experience.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Portland's heat wave nears its official end, but high temperatures will persist through the week. An out-of-state law firm may have a pattern of targeting Asian-owned businesses in the Portland area with ADA complaints. And in national news, it's Black Women's Equal Pay Day. We'll hear from advocates about what needs to be done to address the disparity. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Tuesday, July 9th, 2024. I'm Eric Leuschner. Portland's excessive heat warning lasts through 10 p.m. this evening, though Wednesday's forecast is still expected to reach 99 degrees. Multnomah County's cooling centers have extended their hours and will remain open until 10 p.m. tonight. The cooling centers are pet-friendly and will supply food and snacks for those who need them through the evening. TriMet will provide free transportation to anyone riding to or from a cooling center until 10 p.m. tonight. Anyone needing additional transportation help can call 211 for a free ride to a cooling center. The Multnomah County Medical Examiner says they are now investigating a fifth death that may have been caused by the heat. A 67-year-old woman died in northeast Portland on Monday. The county is still investigating all five deaths that are suspected to be due to the heat wave. The National Weather Service's extreme heat warning for the Portland metro area is expected to end tonight. But the heat wave isn't over quite yet, rest of the week starting Wednesday. An out-of-state law firm may have a pattern of targeting Asian-owned businesses in Portland with ADA complaints. Dozens of lawsuits have been filed against Asian-owned businesses in the Portland area over the last 9 months, KGW reports. Lawyers David Foster and Jessica Mulligan filed the lawsuits over alleged Americans with Disabilities Act violations. The lawyers asked businesses to fix ADA compliance issues and pay settlement fees, some upwards of $10,000, on a very tight timeline. The ADA is the federal law that protects the rights of people with disabilities. It requires that all businesses which are open to the public must be accessible to people with disabilities. Of the ADA lawsuits filed by Foster and Mulligan, almost half were filed against Asian-owned businesses. Many business owners feel they were targeted by Foster and Mulligan because they are in a vulnerable position due to language barriers and a lack of legal knowledge. One of the lawyers, Mulligan, denied that Asian-owned businesses were being targeted. The other, David Foster, said he was hired by a law firm in Tennessee and withdrew from the ADA cases. Today is Black Women's Equal Pay Day, the day of the year that the average full-time black female worker would have to work to make the same as the average non-Hispanic white man made the year prior. Suzanne Potter has more on this pay disparity and how advocates are fighting back.
The wage gap is stark. Black women working full-time year-round make 69 cents for every dollar compared with non-Hispanic white men. And the number is 66 cents when you include all full, part-time, and part-year workers. Deborah Vagans is director of the Equal Pay Today Coalition, a project of the nonprofit civil rights group Equal Rights Advocates.
So black women have to work all the way into July of this year to make what white non-Hispanic men would have made in 2023 alone. This is an acknowledgement of that pay gap.
Advocates are pressing Congress to pass the Paycheck Fairness Act, which would protect all workers against retaliation for discussing their pay. It would also ban the use of prior salary history when setting wages and require the federal government to collect pay data from employers, making it easier to root out disparities. Vagans says the fight for equal pay for equal work is more complex than just the battle against racial and gender discrimination.
But it's also the lack of pay transparency in the workplace. It is setting salaries based on your prior salary history rather than on your qualifications for the job. It's jobs failing to have protections against harassment or pregnancy discrimination.
Vagans also cites the segregation of black women into poverty-level minimum wage work, particularly tipped jobs in the restaurant industry that use a sub-minimum wage. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
An Oregon free speech court case went to trial this week. A civil trial by an anti-abortion group in Grants Pass began on Monday. Abolish Abortion Oregon is a group of anti-abortion street preachers who use megaphones and sometimes graphic signage to protest abortion at city events and the Grants Pass Planned Parenthood office. The group claims that the Grants Pass Police Department has violated their freedom of speech. The group cites multiple occurrences where Grants Pass police have threatened to arrest its members and handed out citations. The lawyer for Grants Pass says the police are responding to noise complaints from neighboring businesses, not restricting the group's speech or anti-abortion views. Abolish Abortion Oregon first filed its lawsuit against Grants Pass in 2020, but the case did not go to trial until Monday. The trial is expected to end Friday. Wages will increase for farm workers in Washington this upcoming harvest season. That's thanks to a decision from a federal judge to temporarily reinstate higher wages for workers while a case makes its way through the courts. Eric Tegedoff has more on the story.
A ruling from a federal judge will keep Washington state growers from depressing wages for farm workers this harvest season. Judge John Chun has temporarily reinstated piece rate wages. The wage is paid for the amount of fruit a worker can pick in an hour, which can be twice as high as the hourly wage. It's a victory for domestic farm workers, who have to compete with H-2A workers. Foreign farm workers allowed temporary visas, who typically work for less. Columbia Legal Services staff attorney Andrea Schmidt says growers offering the lower hourly wage can dissuade local workers.
The grower then goes to the government and says, nobody wanted my job. There's a shortage of local workers. But the shortage isn't a shortage of local workers. The shortage is a shortage of local workers who want to do the job for a significant pay cut.
H-2A visas are allowed to be issued if it doesn't adversely affect domestic workers. Schmidt said that's exactly what was happening without proper wage setting from the U.S. Department of Labor. Growers who objected to the decision say it ignores the ever-changing market conditions on farms. Schmidt says the timing of this preliminary decision is important because the court's final decision likely won't be ready until harvest is over this year. She says that means workers would have had another year of depressed wages, and that wouldn't just affect them this year.
It will also depress wages for the future because growers will report those depressed wages on the wage survey for this year, and prevailing wages are likely to be lower in the future if they're allowed to pay depressed wages now.
Edgar Franks is with the union Familias Unidas por la Justicia, AFL-CIO, in Northwest Washington, which brought the case against the Labor Department. He says this decision is important because farm workers often don't have their voices heard.
We just want to have that opportunity to be heard and have our case being taken as seriously as the industry.
For Washington News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
In a sermon, the GOP's candidate for North Carolina governor says some folks need killing. Trump's campaign adopts moderate abortion language, and New Jersey Senator Robert Mendez's corruption trial nears its conclusion. With more on these stories, it's Farah Siddiqui with 2024 Talks.
Welcome to 2024 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Some folks need killing. We have wicked people doing wicked things, torturing and murdering and raping. It's time to call out those guys in green, go have them handled. Or those boys in blue.
During a church service, North Carolina Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson, the Republican nominee for governor, called for the extrajudicial killing of those he describes as the enemies of Christian America. In spite of a history of controversial statements about gays, feminists, and others, Robinson won the GOP primary after former President Donald Trump praised him as Martin Luther King Jr. on steroids. Trump's campaign has announced that the Republican platform will take moderate positions on abortion and same-sex marriage. Although the former president regularly takes credit for naming the Supreme Court justices who overturned Roe, Trump has also claimed the middle ground on abortion, as he did in April.
I am strongly in favor of exceptions for rape, incest, and life of the mother. You must follow your heart on this issue, but remember, you must also win elections.
Amid concerns of President Joe Biden's fitness, Illinois Democratic Congressman Mike Quigley says Biden should secure his legacy and help the party unite by leaving the race.
The only thing that you can do now to cement that for all time and prevent utter catastrophe is to step down and let someone else do this.
Like many Democratic office holders, Illinois State Representative LaShawn Ford says Biden is risking a crucial election.
The ball is in President Biden's court to calm the Democrats and show them a path forward. I think that's where he's failing it.
For his part, Biden took a defiant tone on MSNBC and in a letter to congressional Democrats. The president says he was chosen by voters in the primaries and says rivals should challenge him at the convention. White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre also fought off questions from reporters regarding the president's health on Monday's press briefing.
The president has seen a neurologist for his physical 3 times. And it is in the reporting that we share a comprehensive reporting. Matter of fact, it's more than what the last guy shared.
Closing arguments began Monday in Democratic New Jersey Senator Bob Menendez's federal corruption trial after nearly 2 months of testimony. Menendez spoke to the Senate floor in January, insisting he's not guilty.
To keep the sensational story in the press, it poisons the jury pool, and it seeks to convict me in the court of public opinion. The sensationalized allegations are now creating a rising call for my resignation, despite my innocence.
Closing arguments could last through most of Tuesday, and if convicted, Menendez could face decades in prison. I'm Farah Siddiqui for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
It's been two decades since Massachusetts became the first state to allow same-sex couples to marry. Studies show that has had a profound positive impact on the lives of LGBTQ people. But a majority of couples nationwide say they're worried that the Supreme Court case that legalized same-sex marriage could be overturned. Catherine Carley reports from Boston.
20 years after Massachusetts became the first state to permit marriage equality, a majority of same-sex married couples say it had a profound positive impact on their lives. A new report finds it strengthened couples' relationships, provided legal protections, financial security, and greater acceptance among family and friends. Clark University psychology professor Dr. Abby Goldberg says marriage equality is part of a public health agenda.
They have access to health insurance. They are physically and mentally healthy. They're able to share the challenges and work of raising children.
Still, Goldberg says nearly 80% of couples surveyed worry about the future of marriage equality. Supreme Court Justices Samuel Alito and Clarence Thomas have both suggested the High Court revisit Obergefell v. Hodges, the decision that legalized same-sex marriage in 2015. The report reveals same-sex married couples are also concerned about what they consider to be an increasingly hostile environment in the United States. More than 500 anti-LGBTQ plus bills have been introduced since last year, including bans on classroom conversations or books about LGBTQ plus people. Goldberg says concerns are forcing couples nationwide to consider relocating to more friendly states, including Massachusetts, or even out of the country.
It's creating not just legal uncertainty, but propelling them to think about the future in ways that require time, money, planning.
Goldberg says marriage equality created families, and the report reveals the positives to ensuring people are protected. Almost 60% of participants said marriage provided more stability or security for their children, and often created new in-laws who could help. For Commonwealth News Service, I'm Catherine Carley.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Coast Range Radio. At 6 o'clock, it's This Way Out. Then at 7, KBOO's LGBTQ heritage panels continue with a roundtable discussion of queer artists live from the KBOO studios. Tonight's weather will be hot, staying in the 80s even after sunset until around midnight. The nighttime low is forecasted to be 66 degrees. Tomorrow's weather will be hot and sunny as well, but the excessive heat warning will end on Tuesday night. The daytime high on Wednesday will be 99 degrees. Today in history, in 2004, the Senate report on Iraq WMD intelligence is released, casting doubt on the rationale for the Iraq War. The quote of the day is from American poet and activist June Jordan, born this day in 1936. She said, quote, "As a child, I was taught that to tell the truth was often painful. As an adult, I have learned that not to tell the truth is more painful, and that the fear of telling the truth, whatever the truth may be, that fear is the most painful sensation of a moral life." Excessive summer heat has descended on Oregon, and some tips can help folks cool their homes down at little or no cost. KBOO's Nina Mayfair reports.
As Oregon is seeing its first major heat event of the summer, some simple tips can help you keep your home cooler. Most of Oregon was under a heat advisory over the holiday weekend. And with summer just starting, Cameron Starr with Energy Trust of Oregon says more hot days are likely ahead. He says one recommendation is to keep out heat by pulling down window shades during the hottest part of day, and open windows when temperatures cool down.
During that time when it's cool outside, a box fan or window-mounted fan on the shady side of the house can really be effective in drawing in cool air.
Excessive heat can be dangerous. Starr says cooling centers are open across the state for people struggling with the heat. He also notes that you can visit many local businesses with air conditioning to cool down. Starr advises people use heat-generating devices such as ovens less frequently during hot days. He adds it's important to check the filters in your air conditioners, especially if they're window-mounted or portable units.
You want to make sure that you're checking those filters. And a lot of manufacturers state to check and clean those every 2 weeks. And if you've got pets, you probably want to increase that cycle.
For people with fans, Starr says check to ensure it's spinning in the direction that cools, allowing you to feel a breeze rather than pulling cool air upward. And making sure there aren't any gaps in doors and windows is also important.
Sealing off any gaps can very much help reduce the amount of cool air that you're losing to the outside.
Energy Trust offers cash incentives for people to install systems that cool or provide heat during the winter. There are also federal tax credits available for equipment like energy-efficient heat pumps. For KBOO News and the Oregon News Service, I'm Nina Mayfair.
A fitness coach in Portland has been fired for allegedly stealing thousands in charitable donations. Ryan Tong was head coach at the Slabtown Orange Theory Fitness Studio. Now he's accused of stealing thousands of dollars from studio members. Tong hosted special charity classes on Sundays where he solicited donations through Venmo for various local nonprofits. Tong assured members that their donations would be directed to these nonprofits and matched by local companies like Nike. Daniel Borgen, a board member at Cascade AIDS Project, filed a police report against Tong in April after his organization did not receive donations. Borgen spoke with multiple other charities Tong had fundraised for who never received any money. Orange Theory announced today they will reimburse all donors and write $1,000 checks to 17 of the nonprofits Tong named. At this time, approximately $12,000 is still unaccounted for. South Dakota will start training new tribal police in-state in hopes of addressing a staffing shortage. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The South Dakota Attorney General's office is partnering with tribes located in the state to train new law enforcement officers. It's part of an effort to address a public safety shortage in Indian Country by keeping recruits close to home. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Lee Strubinger reports.
A batch of law enforcement officer recruits practice a straight arm bar takedown in a gymnasium at the Mickelson Criminal Justice Center in Pierre.
All right, come back up.
24 new officers representing 15 agencies are almost midway through the training course. Of the 24, 11 from three different tribes are slated to become tribal officers following their certification. Often, tribal law enforcement recruits attend a similar 13-week training course hundreds of miles away in New Mexico. That's seen as a barrier to bringing in new law enforcement officers. Some say training in Pierre allows them to go home on the weekends and be around their community. Officer Michelle Cassiano-Keeble is from Sistan-Wahpeton and works for the police department. She says the in-state training allows her to see her children.
Being a mother of three, it has definitely helped me be there for my kids and still do what I want to do and pursue my dream of being a law enforcement officer.
Having an in-state training course dedicated to tribal officers was a priority of Governor Kristi Noem. Attorney General Marty Jackley says that allows for uniform training across the state while building local relationships for officers who will work across jurisdictions.
Making it local makes sense because of consistency. When a deputy sheriff from a county shows up and there's a tribal officer, they've had the same simulator training. They've had the same criminal law training and know when you need to get a warrant and when you don't in South Dakota.
The state training course runs into September before recruits get a state law enforcement certification. Then, Jackley says there will be a special law enforcement commission class, which, if approved by the Bureau of Indian Affairs, allows officers to make a federal arrest in Indian Country. For National Native News, I'm Lee Strubinger in Pierre.
The Confederated Salish and Kootenai tribes joined six other tribes in defense of a new federal rule protecting their water rights in court. The rule requires states to consider tribes' fishing, hunting, and gathering rights while crafting water regulations. Montana Public Radio's Aaron Bolton reports several states want to overturn the rule.
12 states sued the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency over the rule, which was finalized earlier this year. Montana is not part of the lawsuit. Those states argue the federal government overstepped its power under the Clean Water Act and would severely limit their ability to craft water standards. Seven tribes have filed a motion to intervene in the case. They say the rule is key to protecting reserved rights, which gives tribes the ability to hunt, fish, and gather on lands they ceded to the federal government through treaties. The tribes say the rule is within the EPA's authority as it ensures treaties are adhered to. In Columbia Falls, I'm Aaron Bolton.
Members of Arizona's congressional delegation introduced legislation Monday to secure water rights for the Navajo Nation, the Hopi Tribe, and the San Juan Southern Paiute Tribe. The legislation ratifies and funds the Northeastern Arizona Indian Water Rights Settlement Agreement. The settlement would provide reliable and safe water for the tribal communities. It authorizes $5 billion to acquire, build, and maintain essential water development and delivery projects. The tribes would be guaranteed access to more than 56,000 acre-feet of Colorado River water. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
The idea that, quote, no man is above the law used to be a sacred American judicial principle. Now the U.S. Supreme Court has said otherwise, granting absolute immunity to a president's official acts. There would seem to be no limits to what a president, particularly if he's Donald Trump, might do in the guise of official acts. Now we go to Global Citizen commentary on the issue from Portland State Professor Emeritus Mel Gertov. The opinions expressed in the following piece are those of the speaker.
Hello, everyone. The U.S. Supreme Court's July 1 decision to grant absolute immunity to a president's official acts is indeed, as Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer said, a sad day for America and our democracy. Donald Trump and future presidents are evidently now free to follow their worst instincts if they don't like the result of elections or anything else. Absent any guardrails, presidents, by claiming they are acting in their official capacities, may incite insurrections, order the Justice Department to detain critics and round up aliens, declare elections invalid, and ignore Congress if it doesn't follow his will, for instance, on Social Security and abortion. The court's ruling is borderline insanity, feeding the impulsiveness, delusions, and vengefulness that define Donald Trump. Who is to say that such acts are not part of the president's official duties? And if challenged on once illegal decisions, will a Supreme Court have the will to deny the president his imperial prerogatives? Justice Sonia Sotomayor's blistering dissent makes plain that the court's decision, quote, reshapes the institution of the presidency, makes the president a king, and discards the sacred principle that no one is above the law. The president no longer has limits on what he might demand of the Justice Department, once upon a time independent of the executive branch, or of any underling, up to and including ordering the assassination of an opponent. As Sotomayor further said, this new official acts immunity now lies about like a loaded weapon for any president that wishes to place his own interests, his own political survival, or his own financial gain above the interests of the nation. The president of the U.S. is the most powerful person in the country and possibly the world. When he uses his official powers in any way, under the majority's reasoning, he now will be insulated from criminal prosecution. Orders the Navy's SEAL Team 6 to assassinate a political rival? Immune. Organizes a military coup to hold on to power? Immune. Takes a bribe in exchange for a pardon? Immune. 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 The Supreme Court's decision sullies the oath of office a president takes. It is no longer meaningful that the president swears to protect and defend the Constitution. Nor can a president's vows to defend the nation against enemies, foreign and domestic, be taken at face value when now a president may act against those he considers enemies of the people. Trump has told us who they are. Members of the media, certain judges, and former officials in his previous administration who have turned against him. The court has thus given new meaning to imperial presidency. That term came into widespread use at the height of the Vietnam War. Courts at every level have traditionally upheld expansions of presidential power, citing national security. Now that deference has become carte blanche for official acts that go far beyond national security, posing great risks to democratic institutions. The six conservative justices who have granted Trump a wide path to criminality seem oblivious to those risks. They have his back. Immunizing a president from the rule of law has consequences abroad. American exceptionalism has taken a beating for a long time. Now we can bury it. We're not the shining light our founders had hoped we would be. But America's reputation is just one victim. The larger consequence of the Supreme Court's decision is mistrust. Quote, if the U.S. president is free from the restrictions of criminal law, if he has that level of criminal immunity, the other leaders of the allied nations cannot trust the U.S., said a professor of law at Keio University in Tokyo. We cannot maintain a stable national security relationship, he added. A president who is above the law can no longer be treated as the leader of a democracy. He's an autocrat who must be treated with great care, like Vladimir Putin, or an unreliable populist like Viktor Orban. So let us now stop preaching to other countries about respect for the rule of law, free and fair elections, and the importance of a system of checks and balances. We're on a path to becoming another banana republic, an American version of far-right autocracies that are spreading throughout Europe. A thoroughly politicized Supreme Court is just the start of America's de-democratization, open for business, responsive to the most illiberal forces in society, and amenable to strongman rule. Conceivably, the district court that ruled against Trump's claim of absolute immunity will do so again based on his illegal, unofficial acts. But any such outcome will be subject to new litigation, and, if Trump wins in November, to dismissal. All the more reason why this election will be a turning point in American history. Liberals, progressives, and independents must unite to prevent a far-right victory in Congress, as well as in the White House. An independent judiciary, and specifically an incorruptible Supreme Court, should be a major theme of Democrats. The other side is inventing new rules of law. There is no time to lose. I'm Mel Gertoff of the Global Citizen. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Tuesday, July 9, 2024. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Grace Benson, Nina Mayfair, and Mel Gertoff. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Faraz Siddiqui, Eric Tegadoff, Catherine Carley, and Antonia Gonzalez. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7